Welcome to the Views Podcast with your hosts, Nate Farmer Eden and Cole Farrell. Get ready to move even closer to financial freedom as they reveal the real estate investing strategies you need to acquire assets you can cash flow or flip. Now, let's get into today's show.
Marshall, what up, brother?
What's up, brother Nate, man? It's great to be on.
Dude, the pleasure is all ours, man. We are here with Marshall Downs, an amazing real estate investor, a crazy backstory. I'm super excited to have you, man. So I guess without further ado, as we're going to dive into this, man, what got you here? What brought you here? Why real estate?
Okay, so this is a long story, and actually, Cole, I have a squirrel story at some point that I may jump into. Like you said, that's just a life, right?
Yes.
So my name is Marshall Downs. I am a Southwest Michigan investor. Currently, I invest in multifamily and commercial properties, but we're also looking at hotels. So that's been super exciting as of late. I've been investing since 2005, and I started off like a lot of people, right? I bought a single family house. I just bought a cheap, like $22,000 house, and we paid cash for it in 2005. So this is like 2 or 3 months after my wife and I get married. I'm like, yeah, let's buy this little house. It's by the airport in this, you know, kind of run downtown. Like, let's do it. And she's like, you want to do what? So apparently I have really good persuasion techniques. So I talked her into it. She was down. As soon as we close on this house, I go to the place after closing, get the keys from the seller, go to the place after closing, and like it's the middle of winter and all the pipes had frozen. And there's like a leak under the kitchen sink and just a hot mess, dude. So that was like, that was my first real estate lesson. Before I was even in the house for a day, it was like, always check prior to closing. Always walk through that house prior to closing, because sometimes things happen. So ended up actually buying a good handful of rentals kind of in the hood, right? Because started off very little cash. It was just like, that's where we could invest. Fine, not a big deal. Eventually that kind of worked into property management. So I was managing my own small but growing portfolio of properties. And then I was also managing a handful of other properties. I think at our height, I was managing around probably close to 100 doors altogether, somewhere in there. But it was almost exclusively single family, which is a very different thing than managing like 100 door apartment complex, right? So doing that for a while, doing construction as well. And then right about that time, a local economic development agency contacted me. And Nate, I know you've probably got some knowledge of what those are. Cole, I don't know if you do, but for the audience, essentially what this economic development agency did is they did like talent retention and attraction projects, right? So they would help big companies bring in people when they need talent. They would help put together tax credits so that they could keep them in that neighborhood, in that community, all that sort of thing. The interesting thing about this place was they also did real estate development. So when I went to work for them, I was doing low-income housing tax credit projects with them. We were doing a lot of like state and federally funded infill projects. That's where I started kind of the conversion thing, Nate. So you know a little bit about my story, but eventually the story goes we took an old school building and converted it into condos. But where I first saw that really in play was when I was doing the real estate development with these folks, and they took an old fire station and converted it into apartments. So a lot of conversion projects, that sort of thing. It was super cool and I loved my job. But at the same time, I was kind of bitten by that bug because I was like, oh, I'm doing a lot for you guys. And, you know, I'm not feeling the love on the pay. And so I took another job for pay. And as soon as I started that other job, which was loosely related, not quite the same, I absolutely knew that this was not the place for me. I absolutely hated it. And like 2 months into that, I was like, I got to figure out a way to get out of this. So from there, I started really going headlong into real estate. And that was about the time that like Bigger Pockets was becoming a thing. So I started doing flips, started working with investors, started building up a rental portfolio. And then eventually when that, eventually we found this big school for sale, Cole. So we found this like 33,000 square foot school. And I had been working with a handful of investors and folks. So I kind of syndicated that thing. And that was in 2015. And as soon as I syndicated that, left the W-2 job, went full-time real estate, and kind of have been doing that ever since.
Oh my gosh, what a hell of a story. Different pieces to that. I don't even know where to start to unpack. It's crazy too that I love how you started with, like you said, the singles, moved your way up, but then you got into the whole like adaptive reuse almost, which is such a cool space. And I definitely want to jump in, but tell me first, do you still do that kind of stuff? Do you still kind of do the, you know, retrofit or whatever you want to call it? I'm probably using the wrong words. What do you do now?
We do. We absolutely do. So we have a school building right now. It's a much smaller school building. This one's like 8,000 square feet, but we're converting that into condos. But it also, it kind of came out of, we did that first school project really poorly, like made a lot of mistakes, man. We lost $100,000 doing that project. And like in the grand scheme of things, you know, it was a $5 million project overall. So not necessarily a big piece of that, but anytime you lose money for yourself or for investors, or in this case for both, it just feels bad. Right. You can come up with all the like excuses and answers or, you know, justifications, but it's like we screwed that one up. That said, there were some tremendous lessons learned, like extremely tremendous lessons learned about how to better project manage, how to better put the right team together, all these sorts of things. So you take those lessons and you march forward and you can continue doing those things. But right now we're really focused on the value add. So we know construction really well, and we know that we can come in and deliver a really nice product. Of course, you just have to make sure that that matches with the budget and the market and all that sort of thing. But we love multifamily plays. We've turned a couple of buildings, full turned a couple of multifamily buildings. We're actually about to close on another sale of one in the next couple of weeks. So, yes. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So yeah, like the apartment flips are super cool to me. Love them. And that was another thing. Like I saw some people who were starting to post on that back in the day on Bigger Pockets. And I was like, man, like we're flipping houses. Of course you can flip apartments. You know, people do that. And they talked about about the forced appreciation and just all of the little nuances to it. So it was really attractive to me. And because we had cut our teeth and made some mistakes, you know, we kind of had a much better idea what not to do the second, third, fourth, fifth time through.
That's awesome.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. And knowing your story and one, being able to now look back, kind of laugh and, you know, dust yourself off and say, well, shit, we lost $100,000, but now this time we're going to do it bigger, we're going to do it better, we're going to do it right. I see where all my issues were. I see where some of, I guess you could say, lack of a better term, some of the issues within the whole structure and the whole team line. And now you're going to start honing in on those to be able to make sure that this time around you bring it full circle to make sure that you exceed and accelerate past where you guys were at. Hats off to you, bro. I always, always have admired you. Always hats off to you. Always saluted you, man. You're like an older brother to me. And I appreciate you greatly.
Man, feeling is 100% mutual. 100%, Nate. You are phenomenal people, bro. And I mean, in the short time I've been talking to Cole, I'm like, this dude's cool. This dude's down. So I think you guys have a good thing going on there.
It's funny. So I was thinking, as you were saying that, is it like being in a room with like us three guys that can just talk about like flipping apartments and like turning these buildings into apartments. And we just get so excited. Like that is our world. That is what matters to us. But to any normal person, they're like, why do you care? Like what is exciting about that? And it's just, like, it's just a different breed of person. So I love it.
It's so true. It's so true, man.
1,000% agree. So, and you kind of touched on this, but if you could kind of expand a bit, what were some of the challenges that you faced in any of the conversions? What were some of the lessons that was learned? I mean, there had to have been a reason. I mean, it sounded like you were vertically integrated, which you can definitely touch on that, but it sounded like you knew the construction, but what were the shortcomings? How did you fall short, and why did it happen, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I think it's one of those things, right? Like when you move, you know, when you grow to the next level of anything, you're going to really bump your head because you don't know what you don't know, right? Doesn't matter. Like the first, I'm sure you guys have been doing this for a little bit, for however long you've been doing it. And you're like, okay, we'll tweak this and do this better, you know, the second, third, fourth time through, whatever. So you really don't know what you don't know. One of the first things that popped up on that project was we took someone who had intimate knowledge of the property. We took their word for, okay, this is the condition of this thing, right? And we didn't investigate for ourselves because we were all confident that, okay, this person knows that they're talking about. Well, they didn't. So that was $100,000 right there, right? And you continue to kind of march down that line. So of course we had contingency, right? So we had a bucket in case we missed our numbers. The bucket wasn't large enough. And that's another thing that you learn. It's kind of like reserves for, you know, apartments, right? It's like, make sure you have that rainy day money so that you can do whatever you need to do when things go wrong, because inevitably they will go wrong, right? So that was part of it. And then I will say, and this one kind of really fell on me, this pointed directly back to me, but I was really acting as kind of the point person for the project. But when you don't know what you don't know, and you have a lot of, you know, inputs coming in and people are telling you this and telling you that, it can really, you know, I guess, influence you in a way that you won't be influenced once you're seasoned and experienced. So I think just kind of, you know, we kind of did a little bit of swirling there, and we did some things that in hindsight we would just not have done. Today I would just shut it down, like, nah, it's not going to work, man. You know, that's, you know, I've seen it, I've done it, we ain't doing that. That's okay. We'll be friends after this conversation, but we're not doing that. So it's little things like that, you know, just can add up and really kind of spiral a project into nowhere land.
That is such a good piece of advice. And just that, you know, it's tough because you didn't know you didn't know, like you said, right? And you want to do everything perfectly. So you listen to other people's inputs, like you mentioned, and you want to do it. But it, just like you mentioned, you hit the point when you're like, you know what? No, not going to do it. I'm going to do it my way. And I know it because of experience. And it's tough because as much as you can tell someone that, though, like, you have to go through that and face both sides. And then eventually, just like you did, you came on the other side. But I absolutely love that advice, because I just went through pieces of that recently, and it's just like, hits home. So
yeah, less hard lessons learned. But you know, I think like anything, once you get to that like veteran status, you know, I'm trying to think of how this person put it recently. Oh, okay. So I'm a big sports fan, right? And the Chicago Cubs recently hired Craig Counsell from the Milwaukee Brewers as their head coach. And he said, one of the things that he said in his first interview was, you know, one of the big things for me is just having the confidence to say what needs to be said, right? And just throwing it out there. And that only really comes with experience, because when you don't know what you're talking about, you know, you're just kind of like that guy who's like, you know, maybe acting a little too cocky, and you're like, I don't, you know, this guy has not put together the body of work for me to say, I implicitly trust what you're saying. But now that story's different. So
that is so good. Absolutely so good. So let me ask you this. You're doing these projects, and they are very heavy lift projects, end up, you know, with pretty big dollar signs. So what do you do for funding? How are you financing these projects, especially with such big rehab?
So for, you know, it really depends on the project. It's very project dependent. So I'll tell you how I've done a few of these. Like the first house that I bought, I just paid cash. Mistake. Would not have done that ever again. you know, because you understand the power of leverage and that your money can go further and all that sort of thing. The next property that I bought, though, kind of, you know, clued me onto something that I utilize to this day, which is seller financing. So I found a for sale by owner. It was a quadplex. Again, run down, not a great part of town. Bought it for $40,000, and I gave the seller $6,000 down, and he held the note for me. I think we did it over 5 years, something like that, right? Made some repairs, yada, yada, yada. The cool thing is, like two and a half years later, I was working with a bank at that time, a local bank, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm paying this rate, and the rates are here right now. Can you guys finance this? They're like, yeah, you know, what are the numbers? They financed it. And then I went back to the seller because I was able to get a better rate from the bank. And I said, hey, if I pay this off early, will you take, I think it was like $5,000 off the top. And he's like, yeah, sure. Wow. So I kind of like got another little slice off the price by doing that. But the big project that I have now is an interesting story. And Nate, you know this, but Cole, you know, this one was 100% seller financed. 100% seller finance. So it was just a motivated seller. He was not really into real estate. Real estate was not his baby. He has some other businesses, small businesses that really make him a lot of money. And this thing kind of just had fallen by the wayside. So he said, yeah, you know, you take the keys and operate it. And, you know, we'll check it a handful of years later. So it was kind of crazy, but I've had two or three 100% seller finance deals. I've had combinations of, you know, seller financed plus, you know, regular debt. I've used hard money. I've used a lot of private investor money, made private investors a lot of money over the years. So kind of, you know, everything under the sun that I could find in the toolkit was what I utilized to do deals.
That's awesome. And you hit a special sweet spot of mine, which is seller finance. I love seller finance. I think it is, in my opinion, the best financing strategy there is. Everybody wins. The structure, the sky is the limit. I absolutely love it. I've done a bunch of seller finance deals myself, and it's just absolutely incredible. So really cool to hear that. But real quick, dial a little bit more into the when you do like a conversion, how do you fund that? Is it more private? Is it more just traditional? Is it bank funded? Do you fund the construction or what does that look like?
Yeah. So I'll tell you, it was kind of an interesting story with that one in particular. So we went under contract. I think we paid, let's say $550 for the building. We paid $550 for the building. And so me and one other guy at the time were the only guys at the table, and we had like maybe $125,000, right? And we start to collect some more people who were interested in doing this deal with us. We set it up, you know, straight equity style. Everyone was just part of the venture. There was no like LP, GP, you know, limited partner, general partner side. It was just everyone was an owner. And essentially, we didn't get all the money that we needed in time. So we converted the buy-sell agreement into a land contract. Now, it was and a land contract is seller financing, essentially, right? So the seller said, we'll take on, you know, we'll act as the bank. But that land contract only lasted like 2 months because then we got the rest of the money and closed in a regular style with that, right? So we had all of the investors at the table. We had our $550. And we bought the property. Okay. Then we started during this process, I should say, we started talking to some local lenders. And at this time there was one new player in town who was really trying to gain some market share because they weren't around, right? There were some old kind of like, you know, old standard established banks. And these guys were like the new kid in town trying to take the girlfriend, you know, from them. So they said, hey, we'll lend you the construction money on this. We'll give you guys a line of credit to do the condos. And we just want prime plus 0.25%. And we were like, that's great. We'll do that. Plus 0.25%. And all they wanted was a big sign in the yard with like the lender's face on it. And it was pretty funny because it was right down the street from the high school, right? So like, this is an old school building. It's an elementary school right down the street from the high school. So people would like pick up their kids or whatever, drive down there and see this big old face, you know, on the sign. I'm like, hey, we'll lend you money, you know, yada, yada, yada. We're the guys doing this project. It wasn't like a week later and the city was like, you can't have that sign out there. But we already had the money. So it was fine by that point. but yeah, so the way that worked then, they gave us a line of credit that we were able to flex with the project. So, right, we would do like 4 or 5 units, get it up to, I think it was $1 million is what the limit was. We would sell a couple of condos and pay it down and then flex it back and forth through, you know, the first, I think, 3/4 of the project. And then it was paid off by then.
That is so neat. So many in just one project, different creative financing structures in there, which I think there's so many lessons to take from that. So very cool. Very cool.
I agree 1,000%. I mean, there's so many nuggets that were just dropped. One being, I guess you can't have a big sign in front of there. City's going to take it down if it's got your face on it. Right. I'll take that. I was planning on using that one. But no, in all seriousness, for those that are out there, for those that are watching this, I want everybody to understand and grasp the whole concept behind the seller financing. Marshall in and of himself was able to do it with like single family and small residential being, let's just call it 4 units and less. But then what was the size of this most recent one that you did the conversion that was a seller finance?
60 units.
60 units. So 60 it was still units. Able to scale up dramatically, drastically, and continue to use that same kind of creative finance to be able to continue to move and propel forward. Man, again, hats off to you. That is amazing. And I love, just like Cole said, the way that you were able to continue to add layers on top of it to be able to navigate when an obstacle jumped into your path. You're like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And then capitalize on the new players in town trying to take your girlfriend. And like, okay, oh, you guys are new. You guys want to go ahead? Oh, prime plus a quarter? Bet. Let's take that all day. Dude, that is awesome. So one question, and I don't want to say that we're going to sort of pivot or transition, but it sounds like you've been doing tons of deals over the course of quite a few years. How do you pick a market? What's your strategy behind that? And then when you find a market, do you just stick to it, or are you investing in multiple different places? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you that probably up until fairly recently, there wasn't like a lot of science behind it, right? I started like a lot of people do. You get something close to home, you know, got the single family house. I think it was 10, 15 minutes from my house. Not, you know, nothing. I wasn't necessarily, you know, researching at any real depth about how to get into that. And funny enough, it just kind of continued from there. Right. So the deal size grew, but I always really, saw a lot of opportunity in my local farm. Right. This isn't necessarily a market that is on any, you know, big players lists, you know, so the big funds and whatnot aren't necessarily going to be picking up stuff in this area. But that said, we have a lot of things going for us. Right. And I think every small community does. You have to just really intimately know what those assets are and how to properly capitalize on them. So our entire county has like 150,000 population, right? That said, we are on the shores of Lake Michigan. So we have a lot of tourism. We have a lot of second homeowners. We have a lot of people from Chicago, from Indianapolis, even from Detroit who have homes up here. So although there isn't necessarily the same year-round affluence, there's a lot of affluence that does traffic through here and may have properties here, right? So they're intimately aware of what's happening. So that's one part of it. But I really like just being able to, you know, you guys can probably hear I'm pretty hands-on. So I like being able to go to my properties immediately if there's an issue and try to figure it out. So that's kind of still a thesis to this day. I like to invest an area that's no more than 4 hours away. So if I need to do a day trip, I can wake up early, head out, see what's going on, make it back the same day. That I will say has expanded a little bit, because one of the things that I'm trying to get better at, that I've been getting better at, I should say, is partnering with the right people, right? So, you know, Nate, you are, I don't know, maybe 2-3 hours from me, whatever the case may be, but then that, like, that 4-hour window can expand because Nate's over there and Cole's over here and whoever is around. So, you know, going it alone, I will say, is not necessarily the way to do it, but it's how a lot of people naturally start. So I think for me, it's more about people these days, and do I have the right people in the right place to pull a deal off, as opposed to really delving into numbers. I mean, of course, you know, you can go with a lot of the common indicators like growth numbers, jobs, schools, crime. That is one that I've told a few people about that I think is a good play, is call the police in that area. Literally call the cops and say, okay, I'm looking at buying Shady Arms apartments. You know, have you guys made any visits over there? Yeah, we go to Shady Arms every Friday, man. You know, don't do that. Or no, it's completely quiet and they have really good management and there's nothing to worry about. They're going to tell you, they're going to be really straight up with you. So that's just a little bit of a nugget that I found valuable. But, you know, I'm trying to become a little more data reliant on picking markets, but more than anything, it's the people that I'm partnering with.
So many good tips there. I love the last bit that you gave about, you know, calling the cops and asking them. And it's funny because I just think that's so valuable. And I didn't understand that until relatively recently. I went on a tour to a different city, kind of where I was at. And I knew it was a rougher area, but didn't know much about it. Anyways, went and toured it. Seemed great. I was like, great, this is cool. And I went and got coffee and I was just kind of driving around. And when I went and got coffee, an officer pulled up and I was like, oh, this is going to be weird. But I went up and I was like, hey man, I'm looking to buy an apartment building here right down the street over there. What can you tell me? Is that a bad idea? Like, you know, just asked him nicely. And he was like, oh, wow, blah, blah, blah. And immediately, like you said, he was like, well, this is the divide, this street. And if you go over there, beware, this is what kind of happens over there. And if you go on that side of the street, this is what I see over there. And this is where I would say stay out of, or you're living in it, blah, 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 blah. And it was quick chat. And after that, I got in my car and I was like, oh my God, so much information that nobody would have been able to tell me. But that guy, like you mentioned, that is just happy to explain it. So what a good tip. And just what you mentioned earlier about when you're really intimately knowing your area and your assets and just the specific things that make your area important, that, like you said, the bigger picture people don't pay attention to, which makes it so valuable. So also really, really love that.
Thank you, man. Yeah.
So good. So good. Nate, do you have anything to add before I ask something that's really on my mind? But
no, I mean, in all honesty, just to second or third the whole thing, I'm hoping that everybody that's listening, watching, whether you're on the podcast, whether you're on the YouTube, understands the power of just being able to network and asking questions. I run into this from newer investors and those that are interested in trying to think about getting into real estate far too much, is that, and I don't want to use, and I don't want anybody to take offense to this, but a lot of people feel as though they either need to go it alone or that they're a little bit too shy or too timid to ask those questions that, in theory, could have saved you, much like we did in the very beginning of this conversation, $100,000, you know, just using Marshall's example. So just having that quick conversation that Cole was just talking about with a police officer over coffee that took him less than 30 seconds, the insight that he got inside of that market, priceless, right? Just being able to speak up, ask questions, amazing. So thank you so much for pointing that out.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, and I know we're going to transition in a minute, but you've had a lot of growth and you've gone to a lot of different projects. And a lot of those, like we mentioned earlier, were some of these heavy lift projects with a lot of either investor money on the line or your money on the line. How do you mitigate the risk and how do you make sure that you're protected and or everyone else is protected?
I think a lot of what I consider now is structure from day one, right? So there are some of the normal things that you could do to mitigate risk, like, make sure you're well insured, make sure, you know, you have proper eyes on stuff, that sort of thing. Analyze deals well, all that sort of thing. But I think one of the biggest ways is making sure you have a little bit of a war chest, right? Money in this business can solve a lot of problems, and it can also create a lot of problems. So if you're underfunded, you will have problems, right? Problems are just that's essentially what we do. We are always taking care of problems. We are doing it for our clientele, and therefore they give us money because they don't have to take care of that problem themselves. So make sure you're also on the other side. If you're well-funded, you can do that without a lot of stress. So I would honestly say that is probably my biggest risk mitigation tip. But, you know, in terms of analysis, there are also a lot of things to consider. Like you have to really make sure that the deal stands up in the worst case scenario. And it's funny because worst case scenarios have changed in recent years, right? So like with COVID came a whole new set of standards that people think about now. And those are like black swan events, right? Those are going to happen once every 100 years, something like that. So I wouldn't say to necessarily underwrite with something like that, but you have to underwrite and think, all right, what if I have like a really bad quarter or a really bad 6-month run where my occupancy is way down? Can I withstand that? And again, the way that you withstand that is making sure that you have that money stacked up, that you have your proper reserves, that you have your rainy day money to make sure that you can withstand that. So I think that being properly funded can overcome a lot of issues. So I guess that's my biggest thing. But also, you know, I mean, it's like you just talked about, Cole, and like we talked, like we touched on earlier, getting the really down and dirty insight into where you're investing. Because I know, like, quick story, I know a dude who invested on the south side of Chicago. I'm from Chicago, love Chicago. There are some areas in Chicago you do not want to go unless you like got a cousin out there that's going to make sure you're okay, right? So this guy thought he was going to buy some, you know, townhomes and convert them. This is back like before the early recession, before the housing bust, right? And he's like, as soon as we started, we weren't like 2 weeks into doing this, and you know, some gang members show up and they're like, hey man, you know, you can't do this project here. And this guy's like, what? I can't do this. Why can't I do this project? And they're like, well, you can, but you got to pay us and we'll watch your place for you, right? And we're not talking like hundreds of dollars. We're talking like 5-10 stacks to make sure that no one's going to break into your place, who could very well be us breaking into your place.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, just like I would say, a lot of newbies, and this happened a lot in Detroit too, right? You would see places in like 09, 10, up through whatever, maybe 14, 15. You would see places in Detroit that would be auctioned off for like hundreds of dollars sometimes. You could buy houses for like $900 in Detroit, and people had no idea what they were getting into. And they would either like go out there, look at what they bought in the wrong neighborhood, and just be like, okay, that's just, I'm done. I was walking away from that. Or they would try to do a project. And I've heard so many stories, you know, and you guys have probably heard these too, where like someone got all the copper taken out of their house, all the wiring, got the new furnace stolen, someone busted up the new windows, you know. So you really have to know as much as you can about where your farm is, know as much as you can. And that's why I've always been really comfortable just investing close to home.
So good.
Love it. 1,000%. I love it. So thinking about the real estate market, and sort of taking it out a little bit, where do you think the market is heading? And of course, no one, this, don't take this when you're watching this and use this to bid on or whatever else. I just want to get your take on it. What do you think the direction of real estate's heading? How do you think markets are shifting? what's your outlook or what's your views?
I mean, those are great questions. I wish that I was able to give a really profound answer. I think it's like a lot of things, right? Like, I've got friends who are traders, and it's like, at the end of the day, we don't really know, right? We can do our best to come up with what we think is going to be the future. We don't really know. I mean, you can see some things on, you know, the writing is on the wall in certain ways, right? You know, like Nate, you and I and some people that we talk a lot about cap rate decompression, right? So cap rates going up, that's not a good thing for values, yada, yada, yada. You're seeing more and more distressed assets come online, especially on the commercial side. So hotels, you know, which is kind of my next thing. Hotels and apartment buildings, you're seeing way more of them now than you were, for example, a year ago, because, you know, people's rates are changing within their mortgages, or they have something that was termed and now the term is coming due and they're in a very new rate environment, right? And that can't necessarily withstand the project that they have on their hands. So I would say, you know, for me, I'm keeping a close eye on what's happening right now. And I guess trying to make sure that I, you know, when it comes to anything, when it comes to financing, when it comes to looking for deals, making sure that I'm really as knowledgeable as I can be about what's happening in that market and submarket. But that's a lot to say. Like, I don't know, man. I don't know what's happening. I hope I continue to see some deals, but you know, we pay as close attention as we can and try to make the best guesses with the information that we have in front of us.
Love it. I mean, that's a great answer, right? I think it's awesome. And I definitely agree with a lot of your projections. It'll be interesting seeing what happens the next couple months of the next year. exciting. Yeah. Exciting for us, maybe not for others, but if you're positioned right, you know, let's take advantage is what it is. But look, I want to transition to our next part. I love this. It is our point of view questions. We ask these to every guest, kind of like a quick around, you know, shorter answers if you want, but let's jump in. Nate, you ready?
I'm ready.
What separates top performing real estate investors from the rest of the crowd?
Consistency, staying with it day to day. It's not an easy game. Nothing that you want to be really good at is going to be easy. You got to put in the reps. You got to put in the work. You got to make sure that you do it day in, day out, regardless of what's going on. So I think just the consistency.
What's a daily habit that has contributed to your success?
You know, I am a reader. So even though I kind of say some of the stuff in jest about, like, we don't know what's coming, but I do pay attention to these things. You know, you got to read markets and you got to know what's happening. And also I read just to make sure that my mindset is in the right place, right? So I'm constantly gleaning information and using that in my business.
So good. What is a piece of advice that you would give yourself if you were starting out again?
I talked about it earlier. Team, don't go it alone. Work with others, especially people who have been there ahead of you, who can help you do it better. They've made the mistakes. They've bumped their head. So you don't have to do it. So that's the key right there.
So then you mentioned reading. What's your favorite book? Rather be for real estate, what would you recommend for somebody to read?
So I've read a lot of the big ones, like The One Thing and Rich Dad Poor Dad and that sort of thing. I just finished not too long ago. It's not a new book anymore, but it's called The Checklist Manifesto, which is super interesting. And it's by a doctor who was just identifying all of these issues that they had because they didn't have basic checklists in place. in operating rooms. And when you standardize something that simple, you can have amazing efficiencies. So that was really valuable to what we're doing right now. I'm using that, you know, day to day now to just make sure, okay, is my team on the same page with me about whatever? And we're going to make sure that we are with a simple checklist. So yeah, that's a good recent one. It's not my favorite, but it's the one that popped into my mind.
I'll have to order that and give it a read. Yeah. I love new book recommendations. So, all right, what is the biggest non-monetary benefit you've gotten from real estate investing?
Relationships, hands down. Mm. You know, Cole, you were talking about this. It's just people being able to get into a room and talk about what they love, right? We all find our tribe no matter what we're in. So finding your tribe with real estate, Nate, you and I have chopped it up plenty. Like, that's just so invaluable, and being on the same page with people who are passionate about the same thing. So that's it.
I love it. And I must say, I am very impressed. You rifled through every single question, didn't sweat once. I'm impressed, brother. That is awesome. I'm going to take you off the hot seat for now.
Ah, thank you.
This interview. You will be back for more interviews, but I'll take you off for now. Just a couple things, man. Just in general, Marshall, I want to say thank you so much, man. This has been phenomenal. Hearing your story time and time again, every time that I hear it, it's always something new, something I didn't know about. Stories about your very first, very persuasive with the wife. Let's buy the house. Didn't check it. No due diligence was done. Middle of winter. Okay, here we are. Now we got to figure it out. I mean, and then from there, I mean, weirdly enough, I mean, something about us real estate investors, like when we run into an issue, when we run our head against the wall, for some reason, we get back up and we just keep going down that path. We learn from it. We grow from it. You went from a negative experience from the very first time that you bought something to seller financing 60 units and now talking hotels. I mean, you are just literally propelling yourself forward and moving up. That is amazing. Hats off to you, man. Thank you for coming on out, for talking to us on Views. We do have one final question for you, though, if that's cool.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So any last minute nuggets, gems, thoughts, advice, suggestions?
You know, I'm going to sound like a broken record here.
It's but okay.
I've seen so many people succeed in this and other ventures because they just would not give up. So that is my thing. Like, if you're about it, don't give up, right? It's not going to be easy. If you're totally new, it's not going to be easy to get into your first deal. If you've been, you know, here and you're trying to get to the next level, whether it's getting out of single family or getting out of multifamily or getting into hotels or getting into huge land development, there's always going to be a learning curve, but stick to it. Continue to have conversations with people. Continue to put yourself out there so they know what you're about. Don't be held back because you feel like an imposter. If you're doing the thing, you're doing the thing. Let people know. So I guess, I don't know, that was maybe more than one nugget, but there you go.
Okay, man, I'm going to get beat up for saying this from the other guests and I'm sure future guests, but this was without a doubt my favorite interview. Have nonstop just having so much good insight into every single piece and every single thing you've said. I'm like, oh my God, I wish I would have learned that sooner. I wish I would have known that sooner. So anyone that's listening, that's starting, like, listen to this over and over again. There's so much good insight. And I'm going to go back and re-listen to this several times just because it's been phenomenal. So it has been awesome having you. Thank you. Your humor, your personality, your accomplishments is just awesome. So thank you, Marshall.
Ah, thank you, guys. You guys are the best, man. It was a pleasure.
All right, our pleasure. All right, everybody. With that being said, get home safe. I know it's either a YouTube or a podcast. Y'all probably at home. It's fine. But thank y'all so much. Take care. We'll see y'all on the next one.
Thanks for listening to Views. If you enjoyed today's show, take a second to hit the like button. And if you haven't already, subscribe to our channel so you never miss an episode. Until next time, peace and love.